Mr. President, I'm going to speak today about the most media-hyped environmental issue of all time, and it's the word that gets everybody upset when you say it, and the word that many, or the phrase that many politicians are afraid to say, and that is global warming. I've spoken more about global warming than any other politician in Washington today, and my speech will be a bit different from the previous seven floor speeches I've made on this subject, as I focus not only on the science, as I have many times before, but on the media's coverage of climate change. Global warming, just the term, evokes many members in this chamber, the media, Hollywood elites, and our pop culture to nod their heads and fret about an impending climate disaster. As a senator who has spent more time educating about the actual facts about global warming, I want to address some of the recent media coverage of global warming and Hollywood's involvement in this issue. And of course, I will also discuss former Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. Let's keep in mind, Mr. President, I do chair the committee in the United States Senate called Environment Public Works, the committee that has a jurisdiction. And I recall so well when I first became chairman of this almost 4 years ago, I was actually a believer that I've heard it so many times, there must be something to this thing, until I started looking at the science. But I've talked about that before. Since 1895, the media has alternated between global cooling and global warming scares during four separate and sometimes overlapping time periods. From 1895 until the 1930s, the media peddled a coming ice age. From the late 20s until the 1960s, they warned of global warming. From the 1950s until the 1970s, they warned us again of a coming ice age. This makes modern global warming the fourth estate's fourth attempt to promote opposing climate change fears during the last 100 years. Fourth time during the last 100 years. And every time, just as hysterical as the time before. Recently, advocates of alarmism have grown increasingly desperate to try to convince the public that global warming is the greatest moral issue of our generation. Just last week, the vice president of London's Royal Society sent a chilling letter to the media, encouraged them to stifle the voices of scientists skeptical of climate alarmism. During the past year, the American people have been served up an unprecedented parade of environmental alarmism by the media and the entertainment industry, which link every possible weather event to global warming. The year 2006 saw many major organs of the media dismiss any pretense of balance and objectivity on climate change coverage and instead cross squarely into global warming advocacy. First, I'd like to summarize some of the recent developments in the controversy over whether or not humans have created a climate catastrophe. One of the key aspects that the United Nations environmental groups and the media have promoted as the smoking gun of proof of catastrophic global warming is a so-called hockey stick temperature graph by climate scientist Michael Mann from Virginia and some of his liberal colleagues. This graph purported to show that temperatures in the North Hemisphere remained relatively stable over 900 years. Then, as you move into the 20th century, it started spiking, and that would be the blade on the hockey stick. And they say this is due to human activity. Mann also co-publishes a global warming propaganda blog reportedly set up with the help of an environmental group, had his hockey stick come under severe scrutiny. The hockey stick was completely and thoroughly broken once and all and for all in 2006. Several years ago, two Canadian researchers tore apart the statistical foundation of the hockey stick. In 2006, both the National Academy of Sciences and the independent researcher refuted the foundation of the hockey stick. The National Academy of Sciences report reaffirmed the existence of the medieval warming period. That was from about 900 to 1300 AD, and the Little Ice Age, known from about 1500 to approximately 1850. Both of these periods occurred long before the invention of the SUVs or human industrial activity, and could not have possibly impacted the Earth's climate. In fact, scientists believe the Earth was warmer than today during the medieval warming period when the Vikings grew crops in Greenland. We all remember reading about that. That was a period of time when the Vikings, all of a sudden, because it became warmer back around 1000 AD, they started inhabiting Greenland. And they flourished up there until the little ice age came along in 1500. Most of them died at that time. Now, the climate alarmists have attempted to erase the inconvenient medieval warming period from the Earth's climate history for at least a decade. David Deming, an assistant professor at the University of Oklahoma's College of Geosciences, can testify firsthand about this effort. Dr. Deming was welcomed into the close-knit group of global warming believers after he published a paper in 1995 that noted some warming in the 20th century. Deming says he was subsequently contacted by a prominent global warming alarmist and told point blank, and this is a quote, "We have to get rid of the medieval warming period." When the hockey stick first appeared in 1998, and it did exactly that. What I'm saying is, this guy Michael Mann turned around and he had his plot. He completely ignored the fact that we had this medieval warming period here, and then going into the Little Ice Age, which totally changes it. The media have missed the big pieces of the puzzle when it comes to the Earth's temperatures and mankind's carbon dioxide CO2 emissions. It is very simplistic to feign horror and say the 1 degree Fahrenheit temperature increase during the 20th century means we're all doomed. First of all, the 1 degree Fahrenheit rise coincided with the greatest advancement of living standards, of life expectancy, food production, human health in the history of our planet. So it is hard to argue that the global warming we experienced in the 20th century was somehow negative or part of a catastrophic trend. Now, if you look here, you can see very well that during this period of time when things were flourishing and then they went down, it was far more prosperous during the medieval warming period than it was today. Second, what the climate alarmists and their advocates in the media have continued to ignore is the fact that the Little Ice Age, which resulted in harsh winters, which froze New York Harbor and caused untold deaths, ended about in the 1850s. So trying to prove man-made global warming by comparing the well-known fact that today's temperatures are warmer than during the Little Ice Age is about like comparing summer to winter to show the catastrophic temperature trend. In addition, something that the media almost never addresses are the holes in the theory that CO2 has been a driving force in global warming. Alarmists failed to adequately explain why temperatures began warming at the end of the Little Ice Age in about 1850, long before man-made CO2 emissions could have impacted the climate. Then about 1940, just as man-made CO2 emissions rose sharply, about 80%, I might add, the largest increase in any one decade came in the middle of 1940s, the temperatures began to decline. That lasted until about the 1970s. What I'm saying is, this increase in CO2 did not precipitate a warming period. It precipitated a cooling period. Let me repeat, temperatures got colder after CO2 emissions exploded. If CO2 is the driving force of global climate change, why do so many in the media ignore the many skeptical scientists who cite these rather obvious, inconvenient truths? My skeptical views on man-made catastrophic global warming have only strengthened as new science comes in. There have been recent findings in peer-reviewed literature over the past few years showing that the Antarctic is getting colder and the ice is growing, and a new study in geophysical research letters found that the sun was responsible for 50% of the 20th century warming. Now, that's shocking. The sun is responsible for warming. Recently, many scientists, including a leading member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, predicted long-term global cooling may be on the horizon due to a projected decrease in the sun's output. In other words, it's going to start getting cooler again. A letter sent from the Canadian Prime Minister to the Canadian Prime Minister on April 6th of this year by 60 prominent scientists who questioned the basis for climate alarmism clearly explains the current state of the scientific knowledge on global warming. Keep in mind, these 60 scientists having to do with Canada were the ones who had recommended back in the 90s that Canada sign on to the Kyoto Treaty. And here's what they said. They wrote this to Prime Minister Harper. They said, if back in the mid-90s we knew what we know today about climate, Kyoto would almost certainly not exist because we would have concluded it was not necessary. These are the scientists in Canada. The letter also noticed, climate is, quote, climate change is real, unquote, is a meaningless phrase used repeatedly by activists to convince the public that a climate catastrophe is looming and humanity is the cause. Neither of these fears is justified. Global climate changes occur all the time due to natural causes, and the human impact still remains impossible to distinguish from the natural noise. Now, these are scientists talking. You know, people realize that these cycles go in. God's still up there, and we still have the cycles every 1,500 years or so. And every time this happens, the alarmists get out there and say, we're all going to die. One of the ways alarmists have pounded the mantra of consensus on global warming into our pop culture is through the use of computer models which project future calamity. But the science is simply not there to place so much faith in scary computer model scenarios which extrapolate the current and projected buildup of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and conclude that the planet faces certain doom. Dr. Vincent Gray, a research scientist and a 2001 reviewer of the United Nations. Keep in mind, this all started like most bad things do with the United Nations. It was back in 1990. They came out with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. And Dr. Vincent Gray said, the effects of aerosols and their uncertainties are such as to nullify completely the reliability of any of the climate models. Earlier this year, the director of International Arctic Research Center in Fairbanks, Alaska, testified to Congress that highly publicized climate models showing a disappearing Arctic were nothing more than, quote, science fiction, unquote. Now, that wasn't Senator Inhofe talking. That was the director of International Arctic Research Center in Fairbanks, Alaska, who ought to know a little bit about the Arctic. In fact, after years of hearing about the computer-generated scary scenarios about the future of our planet, I now believe that the greatest climate threat we face may be coming from alarmist computer models. This threat is originating from the software installed on hard drives of the publicity-seeking climate modelers. It's long past the time for us to separate climate change fact from hysteria. Now, one final point on the science of climate change. And there are many. As I say, we've made 7 talks down here, averaging about an hour apiece, talking about the flawed science. But one final point about the science that I'm presenting today. I'm approached by many in the media and others who ask, what if you're wrong, Inhofe? What if you're wrong to doubt the dire global warming predictions? Will you be able to live with yourself for opposing the Kyoto Protocol? My answer is blunt. The history of the modern environmental movement is chock full of predictions of doom that never came true. They said it, it never came true. We've all heard the dire predictions about the threat of overpopulation, resource scarcity, mass starvation, and the projected death of the oceans. None of these predictions came true, yet it never stopped the doomsayers from continuing to predict the dire environmental future. The more the eco-doomsayers' predictions fail, the more the eco-doomsayers predict. These failed predictions are just one reason I respect the serious science out there today debunking the latest scaremongering on climate change. Scientists like MIT's Richard Lindzen, former Colorado State climatologist Roger Pelkey, the University of Alabama's Roy Spencer and John Christie, Virginia State climatologist Patrick Michaels, Colorado State University's William Gray, atmospheric physicist Fred Singer, Willie Soon of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, Oregon State climatologist George Taylor, astrophysicist Sally Balumas, just to name a few. But you never hear them. The media never talks about these well-established scientists. But more importantly, it is the global warming alarmists who should ask the question, what if they are correct about man-made catastrophic global warming? Because they have come up with no meaningful solution to their supposed climate crisis in two decades. Let's get that other one up here. We need that one up. If the alarmists truly believe that man-made greenhouse gas emissions are dooming the planet, then they must face up to the fact that symbolism does not solve the climate crisis. It is long past the time for a separate climate change fact from fact to hysteria. Let me just show you this right here. This is one I used on the floor once before, and a very prominent senator from the Northeast who had bought into this whole hoax called global warming, after he saw this chart and researched it and found it was true. This is a chart that says that in the event that everything is true that they've said about global warming, and if all of the countries, I'm talking about the developing nations as well as the developed nations, adhered to and were able to achieve their Kyoto goals, this is the difference that it would make by 2050. It's not even measurable. A final point on the science of climate change. I'm approached by many in the media and others who ask, what if you're wrong? Well, I think the answer is that they have been wrong all along. If the alarmists truly believe that man-made greenhouse gas emissions are dooming the planet, then they must first face up to the fact that symbolism does not achieve a supposed climate crisis. The alarmists freely concede that the Kyoto Protocol, even if fully ratified and complied with, would not have any meaningful impact on the global temperatures, as this chart shows us. And keep in mind that Kyoto is not even close to being complied with by many of the nations that ratified it. There are 15 European Union nations that ratified the Kyoto Protocol. 13 of them have not made their goals. And so they're not going to be able to do it. Many of the nations that ratified Kyoto are now realizing what I have been saying all along. The Kyoto Protocol is a lot of economic pain for no climate gain. Legislation that has been proposed in this chamber would have even less of the temperature effect than Kyoto's undetectable impact. And more recently, global warming alarmists and the media have been praising California for taking action to limit CO2. But here again, this costly feel-good California measure, which is actually far less severe than Kyoto, will have no impact on the climate, only the economy. Symbolism does not solve a climate crisis. In addition, we now have many environmentalists and Hollywood celebrities like Lori David, who has been advocating measures like changing standard light bulbs in your home to fluorescent to help avert global warming. Changing into a more energy-efficient light bulbs is a fine thing to do, but somehow to imply that we can avert a climate disaster by these actions is absurd. Once again, symbolism does not solve the climate crisis. But this symbolism may be hiding a dark side. While greenhouse gas limiting proposals may cost the industrialized West trillions of dollars, it is the effect on the developing world's poor that is being lost in the debate. The Kyoto Protocol, post 2012 agenda, which mandates that developing world, we're talking about Africa and so forth, would be subject to restrictions on greenhouse gases, could have the potential to severely restrict development in regions like Africa, Asia, and South America, where some of the Earth's most energy-deprived people currently reside. Expanding basic necessities like running water and electricity in the developing world are seen by many in the green movement as a threat to the planet's health that must be avoided. Energy poverty equals a life of backbreaking poverty and premature death. If we allow scientifically unfounded fears of global warming to influence policymakers to restrict future energy production and the creation of basic infrastructure in the developing world, billions of people will continue to suffer. Last week, my committee heard testimony from Danish statistician Bjorn Lomborg, who was once a committed left-wing environmentalist until he realized that so much of what that movement preached was based on bad science. Lomborg wrote a book called The Skeptical Environmentalist and has organized some of the world's top Nobel laureates to form the 2004 Copenhagen Consensus, which ranked the most pressing problems. And guess what? They placed global warming at the bottom of the list in terms of our planet's priorities. The Copenhagen Consensus found that most important priorities for our planet include combating disease, stopping malaria, securing clean water, and building infrastructure to help lift the developing nations out of poverty. I've made a lot of trips to Africa. I think a lot of people know I've had a mission in Africa for well over 10 years now. And once you see the devastating poverty, you know, we just think we have poverty in this country. Until you've seen it, until you've walked through the back streets of Cotonou, Benin, and seen little kids barefooted running through the junk piles with rats biting at their heels and their feet bleeding. Poverty has a grip on that continent. You really quickly realize that fears about global warming are severely misguided. You know, I firmly believe, Mr. President, that when the history of our era is written, future generations will look back with puzzlement and wonder why we spent so much time and effort on global warming fears and pointless solutions like the Kyoto Protocol. One of your favorite Frenchmen, I'm sure, Mr. President, Jacques Chirac, French president, provided the key clue as to why so many in the international community will revere the Kyoto Protocol, who in 2000 said, "The Kyoto represents not climate change, but represents the first component of an authentic global governance." That's Jacques Chirac, folks. Furthermore, if your goal is to limit CO2 emissions, the only effective way to go about it is to use cleaner, more efficient technologies that will meet the energy demands of this century and beyond. The Bush administration and my Environment and Public Works Committee, the committee that I chair, have been engaged in these efforts as we work to expand nuclear power and to promote the Asian-Pacific Partnership. This partnership stresses the sharing of new technology among member nations, including three of the world's top emitters, China, India, and Korea, all of whom are exempt from Kyoto. Let's keep in mind that even if all these charts were true and everyone is going to comply with this, we passed in this chamber just a very short while ago by a unanimous vote, 96-0, that said that if you come back with any kind of a treaty that says that we're going to treat the developing nations any different from developed nations, we're going to oppose it. So it's unanimously opposed. Many in the media, as I've noted earlier, have taken it upon themselves to drop all pretense of balance on global warming and instead become committed advocates of the issue. Here's a quote from Newsweek. Yeah, you got to listen to this, Mr. President. This is very, very important. I'm going to quiz you later. There's a quote from Newsweek magazine. Now, listen to this. This is a quote. It says, "There are ominous signs that the Earth's weather patterns have begun to change dramatically and that these changes may portend a drastic decline in food production with serious political implications for just about every nation on Earth." Second, a headline in the New York Times reads, "Climate changes endanger world's food output." Here's another quote from Time magazine. "As they review the bizarre and unpredictable weather pattern of the past several years, a growing number of scientists are beginning to suspect that many seemingly contradictory meteorological fluctuations are actually part of a global climate upheaval." All this sounds very ominous. That is until you realize that the three quotes I just read were from articles in 1975, editions of Newsweek magazine and the New York Times, and of Time magazine in 1974. They weren't referring to global warming. They were warning of a coming ice age. So the same people who were hysterical back then are using the same words to describe what's happening today. Let me repeat. All three of those quotes were published in the 1970s, warning of a coming ice age. Another ice age is coming. We're all going to die. In addition to global cooling fears, Time magazine has also reported on global warming. Here is an example. "Those who claim that winters were harder when they were boys are quite right. Weathermen have no doubt that the world, at least for the time being, is growing warmer." Before you think that is just another example of the media promoting Vice President Gore's movie, you need to know that the quote I just read to you is from Time magazine and not a recent quote. It was from January 2nd of 1939. Yes, in 1939, 9 years before Vice President Gore was born and over three decades before Time magazine began hyping the coming ice age, and almost five decades before they returned to hyping global warming, Time magazine in 1951 pointed to recent to receding permafrost in Russia as proof that the planet was warming. In 1952, the New York Times noted that the trump card of global warming has been the melting glaciers. But media could not decide between warming or cooling scares. There are many more examples of the media and scientists flip-flopping between warming and cooling scares. They don't really care. They just want to scare you. They want to make sure you're scared, and then they're satisfied. Here's a quote from the New York Times reporting on fears of an approaching ice age. Geologists think the world may be frozen up again. That sentence appeared over 100 years ago in the February 24th, 1895 edition of the New York Times. Let me repeat, 1895, not 1995. A front page article in the October 7th, 1912 New York Times, just a few months after the Titanic struck an iceberg and sank, declared that a prominent professor warns us of an encroaching ice age. The very same day in 1912, the Los Angeles Times ran an article warning that the human race will have to fight for its existence against cold. In an August 10th, 1923, Washington Post article declared, "Ice age coming here." By the 1930s, the media took a break from reporting on the coming ice age and instead switched gears to promote global warming. This is the 1930s. America America in longest warm spell since 1776. Temperature line records a 25-year rise. That was in an article in New York Times. That was March 27, 1933. The media of yesteryear was also not above injecting large amounts of fear and alarmism into the climate articles. An August 9, 1923, front page article in the Chicago Tribune declared, quote, "Science says Arctic ice will wipe out Canada," unquote. The article quoted a Yale University professor who predicted that large parts of Europe and Asia would be wiped out and Switzerland would be entirely obliterated. A December 29th, 1974 New York Times article on global cooling reported that climatologists believe the facts of the present climate change are such that most optimistic experts would assign near certainty to a major crop failure in a decade. The article also warned that unless government officials reacted to the coming catastrophe, quote, many mass deaths by starvation and probably in anarchy and violence would result. In 1975, the New York Times reported that, quote, a major cooling was widely considered to be inevitable. These past predictions of doom have a familiar ring, don't they? They sound strikingly similar to our modern media promotion of former Vice President's brand of climate alarmism. An alarmism that he believes is going to put him back in the White House. After more than a century of alternating between global cooling and warming, one would think that this media history would serve a cautionary tale for today's voices in the media and scientific community who are promoting yet another round of echo doom. Much of the 100-year media history on climate change that I've documented here can be found in the publication titled Fire and Ice from the Business and Media Institute, which raises the question, how has this embarrassing 100-year documented legacy on coverage on what turned out to be trendy climate science theories made the media more skeptical of today's sensational promoters of global warming? You be the judge. On February 19th of this year, CBS News 60 Minutes produced a segment on the North Pole. The segment was completely one-sided report alleging rapid and unprecedented melting of the ice polar cap. It even featured correspondent Scott Pelley claiming that the ice in Greenland was melting so fast that he barely got off an iceberg before it collapsed into the water. 60 Minutes failed to inform its viewers that a 2005 study by a scientist named Ola Johansson and his colleagues showing that the interior of Greenland is gaining ice in mass according to scientists, the Arctic was warmer in the 1930s than it is today. The Arctic was warmer in the 1930s than it is today. And you read if you see this film, they'll say it's the coldest, they say it's the warmest it's ever been. It's just not true. And by the way, around the edges of ice caps, there's a phenomenon known as calving. So when it becomes thicker in the middle, it melts a little bit on the outside, but the overall volume density increases. On March 19th of this year, 60 Minutes profiled NASA scientist and alarmist James Hansen, who was once again making allegations of being censored by the Bush administration. In this segment, objectivity and balance were again tossed aside in favor of a one-sided glowing profile of Hansen. The 60 Minutes segment made no mention of Hansen's partisan ties to former Democrat Vice President Al Gore or Hansen's receiving a grant of $250,000 from the left-wing Heinz Foundation run by Teresa Heinz, I guess she's Teresa Heinz now. There was also no mention of Hansen's subsequent endorsement of her husband John Kerry for the presidency in 2004. He is a political activist. Never mentioned in the 60-minute segment. Many in the media dwell on any industry support given to so-called climate skeptics, but the same media completely fail to note Hansen's huge grant from the left-wing Heinz Foundation. The foundation's money originated from the Heinz family ketchup fortune. So it appears that the media makes a distinction between oil money and ketchup money. 60 Minutes also did not inform viewers that Hansen appeared to concede in a 2003 issue of Nature Science that the use of extreme scenarios to dramatize climate change may have been appropriate one time to drive the public's attention on the issue. In other words, it's all right to lie in order to drive the public's attention to the issue that you want them to have and to that opinion. Why would 60 Minutes ignore the basic tenets of journalism, which call for objectivity and balance in sourcing, and do such one-sided segments? The answer was provided by correspondent Scott Pelley. Pelley told the CBS News website that he justified excluding scientists skeptical of global warming alarmism from his segments because he considers skeptics to be the equivalent of the Holocaust deniers. This year also saw a New York Times reporter write a children's book entitled The North Pole Was Here. The author of the book, New York Times reporter Andrew Revkin, wrote that it may someday be, quote, easier to sail than stand on the North Pole in the summer. So here we have a very prominent environmental reporter, the New York Times, who's promoting aspects of global warming alarmism in a book aimed at our kids. In April of this year, Time magazine devoted an issue to global warming alarmism entitled Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid. This is the same Time magazine which first warned of the coming ice age in the 1920s before it switched to a warning about global warming in the 1930s before it switched again to promoting the 1970s coming ice age scare. The April 3rd, 2006 Global Warming Special Report of Time magazine was a prime example of the media's shortcomings, as the magazine cited partisan left-wing environmental groups with a vested financial interest in hyping alarmism. Headlines blared, more and more land is being devastated by drought. The Earth is at a tipping point. The climate is crashing. Time magazine did not make the slightest attempt to balance its reporting with any views with scientists skeptical of this alleged climate disaster. I don't have journalism training, but I dare say calling a bunch of environmental groups with an obvious fundraising agenda and asking them to make wild speculations on how bad global warming might become is nothing more than advocacy for the left-wing causes. It is a violation of basic journalistic standards. To his credit, the New York Times reporter Revkin saw fit to criticize Time magazine for its embarrassing coverage of climate science. So in the end, Time's cover story titled Be Worried, Be Very Worried appears to have been apt. The American people should be worried, should be very worried of such shoddy journalism. Now, Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. In May, our nation was exposed to perhaps one of the slickest science propaganda films of all time. Former Vice President Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, in addition to having the backing of Paramount Pictures to the market of this film, Gore had the full backing of the media. The leading charge was none other than the Associated Press. And, of course, they had the elitists from Hollywood. On June 27th, the Associated Press ran an article by Seth Borenson that boldly declared scientists give two thumbs up to Gore's movie. The article quoted only five scientists. Two thumbs up, five scientists. They were praising Gore's science, despite AP, the Associated Press, having contacted over 100 scientists. The fact that over 80% of the scientists contacted by AP had not even seen the movie, or that many scientists have harshly criticized the science presented by Gore, did not dissuade the news outlet one bit from its mission to promote Gore as a brand of climate alarmism. Let's keep in mind, they said it's a thumbs up, 100% of the scientists, and it was only 5 out of 100. I'm almost at a loss as to how to begin to address the series of errors, misleading science, and unfounded speculation that appear in the former vice president's film and in his book of the same name. Now, here's what Richard Lindzen, he's a meteorologist from MIT, what he's written, the now-debunked hockey stick temperature chart in an attempt to prove man's overwhelming impact on the climate. He attempted to minimize the significance of the medieval warming period or the Little Ice Age. He insists on a link between increased hurricane activity and global warming that most scientists believe does not exist. He asserted that today's Arctic is experiencing unprecedented warmth while ignoring the temperatures in the 1930s were warmer than they are today. He claimed the Antarctic was warmer and losing ice, but failed to note that is only true of a small region. The vast bulk has been cooling and gaining ice. This is the Antarctic. He hyped unfounded fears that Greenland's ice is in danger of disappearing. He erroneously claimed that the ice cap on Mount Kilimanjaro is disappearing due to a global warming, even while the region cools, and researchers blame the ice loss on local land use practices. What they're talking about here is they had deforested the area down below, and that was the reason. It had nothing to do with CO2, obviously. He made assertions of massive future sea level rise that is way outside of any supposed scientific consensus and is not supported in even the most alarmist literature. He incorrectly applied that a Peruvian glacier's retreat is due to global warming while ignoring the fact that the region has been cooling since the 1930s and other glaciers in South America are advancing. He blamed global warming for water loss in Africa's Lake Chad, despite a NASA scientist concluding that local population and grazing factors are more likely the culprits. He inaccurately claimed polar bears are drowning in significant numbers due to melting ice, when the fact is they're thriving. He completely failed to inform viewers that the 48 scientists who accused President Bush of distorting science were part of a political advocacy group set up to support the Democrat presidential candidate John Kerry in 2004. Now, that was just a brief sampling of some of the errors presented in Inconvenient Truth. Imagine how long the list would have been if I had actually seen the movie. There wouldn't be enough time to deliver this speech today. Along comes Tom Brokaw. Following the promotion of an Inconvenient Truth, the press did not miss a beat in their role as advocates for global warming fears. ABC News put forth its best effort to secure its standing as an advocate for climate alarmism when the network put out a call for people to submit their anecdotal global warming horror stories in June for use in a feature news segment. In July, the Discovery Channel presented a documentary on global warming narrated by former NBC anchor Tom Brokaw. The program presented only those views of scientists promoting the idea that humans are destroying the Earth's climate. You don't have to take my word for the program's overwhelming bias. A Bloomberg News TV review noted, quote, "You'll find more dissent at a North Korean political rally than in this program," unquote, because of its lack of scientific objectivity. Brokaw also presented climate alarmist James Hansen to viewers as unbiased, failing to note his $250,000 grant from the partisan Heinz Foundation over his endorsement of Democratic president nominee John Kerry in 2004 and his role promoting former Vice President Gore's Hollywood movie. Brokaw, however, did find time to impugn the motives of scientists skeptical of climate alarmism when he featured paid environmental partisan Michael Oppenheimer of the group Environmental Defense, accusing skeptics of being brought out by fossil fuel interests. The fact remains that political campaign funding by environmental groups to promote climate and environmental alarmists dwarfs spending by the fossil fuel industry by 3-1. Environmental special interests through their 527s and their spent over $19 million compared to $7 million spent by the oil and gas industry through political action committees in the 2004 election cycle. I'm reminded of a question the media often asks me about how much have I received in campaign contributions from the fossil fuel industry. My unapologetic answer is always not enough, especially when you consider the millions of partisan environmental groups pour into political campaigns. Continue with our media analysis. On July 24, 2006, the Los Angeles Times featured an op-ed by Naomi Oreskes, a social scientist at the University of California, San Diego, and the author of a 2004 Science magazine study. Oreskes insisted that a review of 928 scientific papers showed there was 100% consensus that global warming was not caused by natural climate variations. This study was also featured in former Vice President Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. However, the analysis in Science magazine excluded nearly 11,000 studies, or more than 90% of the papers dealing with global warming, according to a critique by British social scientist Benny Pizer. Pizer also pointed out that less than 2% of the climate studies in the survey actually endorsed the so-called consensus view that human activity is driving global warming, and some of the studies actually opposed that view. 2%. She calls 2% 100%. But despite this manufactured consensus, the media continues to ignore any attempt to question the orthodoxy of climate alarmism. As the dog days of August rolled in, the American people were once again hit with more hot hype regarding global warming, this time from the New York Times op-ed pages. A columnist penned an August 3rd column filled with so many inaccuracies, it's a wonder the editor of the Times saw fit to publish it. For instance, Bob Herbert's column made dubious claims about polar bears, the snows of Kilimanjaro, and he attempted to link the past summer's heat wave to the U.S. In the United States to global warming, something that the alarmist James Hansen does not support. Finally, September 15th, 2006, Reuters news article claimed that polar bears in the Arctic are threatened with extinction by global warming. The article by correspondent Alistair Doyle quoted a visitor to the Arctic. Now listen to this, Mr. President. A visitor to the Arctic who claimed he saw two distressed polar bears. According to Reuters article, the man noted that one of the polar bears looked to be dead, the other one looked to be exhausted. The article did not state that the bears were actually dead or exhausted, merely that they looked that way. Now, we really arrived at the point where major news outlets in the United States are reduced to analyzing whether or not polar bears in the Arctic appear restful. How does reporting like this get approved by the publication of the editors of Reuters? I don't know. What happened to covering the hard science in this issue? What was missing from the Reuters news article was the fact that according to biologists who study animals, polar bears are doing quite well. Biologist Dr. Mitchell Taylor of the Arctic government of Nunavut, which is a territory of Canada, refuted these claims in May when he noted that, and this is a quote. Keep in mind, I'm quoting the biologist, Dr. Mitchell Taylor, from the Arctic government. He said, quote, of the 13 population of polar bears in Canada, 11 are stable or increasing in number. They are not going extinct or even appearing to be affected at the present. Sadly, it appears that reporting anecdotes and hearsay as fact has now replaced the basic tenets of journalism for many media outlets. It is an inconvenient truth that so far, 2006 has been a year in which most major segments of the media have given up on any quest for journalistic balance, fairness, or objectivity when it comes to climate change. The global warming alarmists and their friends in the media have attempted to smear scientists who dare to question the premise of man-made catastrophic global warming. And as a result, some scientists have seen their reputations and their research funding dry up. The media has so restlessly promoted global warming fears that a British group called the Institute for Public Policy Research, and this from a left-leaning group, issued a report in 2006 accusing media outlets of engaging in what they term climate porn in order to attract the public's attention. Bob Carter, a paleoclimate geologist from James Cook University in Australia, has described how the media promotes fear, climate fear. This is a quote. Each such alarmist article is larded with words such as if, might, could, probably, perhaps, expected, projected, or modeled. And many involve such deep dreaming of ignorance of scientific facts and principles that they are akin to nonsense. Professor Carter concluded in an op-ed in April of this year. Another example of this relentless hype is the reporting on the seemingly endless number of global warming impact studies, which do not even address whether global warming is going to happen. They merely project the impact of potential temperature increases. The media endlessly hypes studies that purportedly show that global warming could increase mosquito population and malaria, West Nile virus, heat waves and hurricanes, threaten the oceans, damage coral reefs, boost poison ivy growth, damage vineyards and global food crops, to name just a few of the global warming-linked calamities. Oddly, according to the media reports, warmer temperatures almost never seem to have any positive effects on plant or animal life or production. Fortunately, the media's addiction to so-called climate porn has failed to seduce many Americans. According to a July Pew Research Center poll, the American public is split about evenly between those who say global warming is due to human activity versus those who believe it's from natural factors or not happening at all. And this is down. This is significantly down from the previous polls. In addition, an August Los Angeles Times Bloomberg poll found that most Americans do not attribute the cause of recent severe weather events to global warming, and the portion of Americans who believe global warming is naturally occurring is on the rise. It's nothing short of a miracle and amazing that the American people are not buying this alarmism. That's all they see on TV, all they hear about. The American people, I really believe the American people know when their intelligence is being insulted, they know when they're being used, and when they're being duped by the hysterical left. The American people deserve better, much better, from our fourth estate. We have a right to expect accuracy and objectivity on climate change coverage. We have a right to expect balance in sourcing and fair analysis from reporters who cover the issue. Above all, the media must roll back this mantra that there is scientific consensus of impending climate doom as an excuse to ignore recent science. I get this all the time from the left. They say, well, the consensus is already there. We don't want to talk about science. No wonder they don't, because most of the science since 1999 has refuted everything they're asserting. After all, there's so-called scientific consensus that there were 9 planets in our solar system until Pluto was recently demoted. I'm a realist, and I want to challenge the news media to reverse course and to report on this objective science of climate change. Stop ignoring legitimate voices in this scientific debate and stop acting like it's being used historically. You know, breaking the cycles of media hysteria will not be an easy, since hysteria sells and it's very profitable. But I really believe that the issue is getting worn out. They've not been able to come up with anything to support their side. And as Winston Churchill says, truth is incontrovertible. Panic may resent it. Ignorance may deride it. Malice may destroy it. But there it is. And it will be there. And we will understand.